This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Astros opening day today. 3:10 first pitch, giveaway, schedule magnet, pregame, reveal of the new look, Phillips 66 home run train, first pitch, Larry Durker. There you go. You're ready. If you're in your seat, I got you ready to go. Odds to win the World Series, 16-1. About the lowest it's been going into a season in a long, long time. But still not bad. 16-1. It's like a 5% chance, 4% chance to win
right,
the World Series. We'll take it.
Yeah. I eagerly look forward to watching that ascend as we barrel on through this season, Sean. Even when you're the runaway favorite, what's the percentage chance usually?
Like 20%? Like 15%, 20%. Yeah. Like 20%, yeah. You are a heavy favorite.
The field is always favored.
Yep. Unless you're the Golden State Warriors of, like, you know, the Kevin Durant Golden State Warriors. Like deep into the
even
playoffs.
Then, I think if you go into the regular season, it was still less than 50%.
Yeah. So there you go. 86.5 season win total. We're both going over on that, as you can imagine. If they go under 86.5, if they don't win the division, if this is the first time they miss the playoffs,
yeah.
You think about that. They haven't missed the playoffs since 2016. It's been almost a decade. What'll be the biggest reason the Astros don't make the playoffs, you think? They miss.
I'm trying to think, just to make it really general, is it pitching or is it offense? I think it's offense. I think the pitching, I feel confident enough that with the name guys and Spencer Arrighetti being a huge wild card there, we're coming off this year where we saw so many. A, the pitchers underperformed in the first part of the season. B, injuries were just a huge, huge part of it. So maybe I'm being a little too biased by recent experience. But I don't think that's going to happen again. I think last year was very flukish in the bad performances early and then the sheer number of injuries that I just feel more confident that you're gonna get more Astros brand pitching this year.
I'd say bullpen would be for me, which falls under pitching. I know you look at the names, like it's Hader, who, let's point out, Hader wasn't great last year. He was good, but he's still got four more years of him at $19 million a year. Like Josh Hader needs to be a hammer at the back end of the bullpen. He was 34 out of 38 on save opportunities, and there were other pitching performances he had that didn't show up on the save opportunity grid that weren't great either. He had an ERA of almost 4 last year. He wasn't great. Brian Abreu is probably a future closer somewhere, probably not here because Hader, you're committed to Hader forever. But even Brian Abreu can be a little choppy and inconsistent sometimes. After those two, it's a lot of after those two, the next biggest brand name you've got in the bullpen that's actually done good things for you is Taylor Scott. You know, it's a lot of it is a lot of unknown commodities in that bullpen right now.
If I'm going to pick on something, one individual that's under the radar, bullish right now for me, it'd be Taylor Scott, mm-hmm. just because I think the injury had a lot to do with why he dropped off, and then he kind of recaptured it. So I think the Taylor Scott getting a full year, if he can stay healthy, might end up being a pleasant surprise for a lot of people.
Yeah,
the whole Josh Hader thing, the one thing that it just didn't feel right with Josh Hader is that they did the opposite of what the Astros typically do, which is they bought high. They bought a guy that's been the guy that's had good season, then bad season, then good season, then bad season. They went and paid him big money after his best season he'd ever had, instead of doing what they typically do, which is, hey, take a guy that doesn't we know we can get more out of him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It felt like they'd strayed away from their standard operating procedure.
It was out of nowhere. You know, because they already had Ryan Presley on the roster, who wasn't a bad closer. You know, he was not your typical closer in terms of how he closed out games, but he was effective, and he was super effective in the postseason too. Yeah, that was.
I think with Hader, it might be more that they looked at his inconsistency throughout his career. But he still has a 2.7 career ERA. Yeah. They can iron that out. That's and that like you get a more consistently dominant version of himself.
I think the jarring thing about the Hader signing was it was a 5-year deal. Like, Jim Crane never gives 5-year deals to outside free agents. You know, the only time you get 5 or even 6-year deals are if you're in the building already. So that was kind of jarring. But here we are. I mean, he's your guy. So that would be it for me. I think they've got enough offense to go do what they need to do, especially if Cam Smith's a huge X factor in all this. They're 7-1 to win the AL. They are favored to win the division right now, but it is tight. It's +160. For the Astros, you bet 100 to win 160. It's +180 for the Rangers and +240 for the Mariners. That is a logjam at the top of the division.
I would say realistically, if you're trying to be as objective as possible, where let's get rid of any of the feelings we have from spring training or anything else. If you're on the outside looking in, I think I, as an Astros fan, a lot of people probably maybe might be a little too irrationally optimistic about Cam Smith. Just realistically, but you're not going to knock me off of it. I'm really excited about him.
Yeah.
Jose Altuve had a down year last year offensively, and as he's approaching his age 35 season. And then beyond that, I think maybe Jeremy Pena and the progress he showed in spring training, we're probably a lot more bullish about Jeremy Pena, because it looked like both offensively and defensively, he made some actual substantive changes. So his performance in spring training, it wasn't flukish or anything. I think there's substance behind it. But am I reading way too much into it? Probably. Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah, well,
just go ahead and try to knock me off this high. So, you can't do it.
So I think, as far as, you just touched on a few of them, I think the biggest storylines for the Astros heading into this season today, in opening day, this afternoon, 3:10 p.m., the biggest one is Altuve to me. And I know Cam Smith it's neck and neck between Cam Smith and Jose Altuve as to which thing, or what are we going to be talking about more here, at least over the outset of the season, Cam Smith or Jose Altuve. Now, if Cam Smith comes out on fire like he was in spring training, Cam Smith will be the storyline of this team. He's now the favorite for Rookie of the Year. He was 6th on the odds board 2 days ago. He makes the team. He has a nice video put out where it gets real emotional, does a few interviews, and poof, now he's 1st on the odds board. I guess probably some of the trepidation would be he had to make the team first in order to be the favorite for Rookie of the Year. But Altuve was the biggest storyline coming into spring training. Cam Smith made himself the biggest storyline by the spring training that he had. The Altuve thing is fascinating to me. Future Hall of Famer. This is a team that the everyday lineup feels like a puzzle with all the different guys that can play different positions. Some of them not very well. Like, they've got a lot of guys that can play different positions. Really? Do they play these positions well? By and large, no, not really. Jose Altuve playing second base and left field. Is he good at those? No, neither one. Cam Smith, right field. Is he good? I have no idea.
No clue.
Espada. Stop asking questions. Okay?
Espada is basically, he's been very realistic about how he thinks that Altuve and Cam Smith will play in right field. And he almost put a ceiling on Altuve as average to above average. Yeah. And with Cam Smith, above average maybe, but like that there's, that you certainly don't feel awesome about him. The biggest thing that you hope is that, hey, the Astros pitching staff is going to, they project to be one of the most ground ball heavy pitching staffs in the league. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to have as many instances or times where it might be a problem. So, and Espada, to his credit, has been very frank about this because he's mentioned that part of it, that it's certainly something to consider, and that it's probably not going to be a really smooth path.
Yep.
You know the way errors work. It's not just like they come out spread evenly across the season. There's going to be a couple games or instances where you get, or a series where both those guys defensively probably hurt you, and you just got to make up for it at the plate.
I'm really anxious to see where Cam Smith's rookie year stacks up compared to other anointed rookies that have come up. You know, there have been so many, the Astros have had so many guys come up that we've been anticipating coming up, and Cam Smith's not doing that. He's straight onto the team. But when Springer came up, I remember his, you know, he came up halfway through that 2014 season, hit a bunch of bombs. Carlos Correa and Yordan Alvarez were rookie of the year. They were the best rookies in the American League. Cam Smith would be holding up that tradition if he were doing that. Bregman started off slow but figured it out pretty quickly. Kyle Tucker took probably the longest out of all those guys to kind of, you know, it wasn't really till the COVID year till you felt good about Kyle Tucker being an everyday player. So he was probably the took the longest to figure it out. I wonder, like, where does Cam Smith fall in that, you know, sort of galaxy of former Astros, highly touted rookies that have come up?
Yordan just never had a hiccup. Right.
No.
I mean, that was the strange thing about Yordan. It was that he came in, got off to a good start, and then you just kept waiting for him to struggle or have that moment where it didn't look like he was ready. And he never really had an extended hiccup like that. So the consistency that Yordan had, I think, is the most the most promising.
That would be the best. Yordan's rookie year. Granted, Yordan's rookie year, I think he only played in 87 games or something like that. But a 162-game version of Yordan's rookie year, you've got a future. You've got a cornerstone, foundational, future, perennial all-star, if that's who you're getting.
Hey, Sean.
Yeah.
There's this one part about the Cam Smith experience and him being elevated so quickly that's kind of confused me, and I feel like maybe my reading comprehension has taken a turn. Let's do a little reading comprehension exercise.
Okay.
Because I've read this paragraph several times, and I maybe dementia's starting to kick in. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
This is Cam Smith and how quickly he's been elevated. Although some position players like Dave Winfield and Bob Horner went straight to the MLB from the MLB draft to the big leagues without ever playing in the minors, Smith is the third fastest position player to make an opening day roster since the draft was instituted in 1965.
Okay.
Oh, I see where my issue was. Okay. So Pete Incaviglia of the Rangers, without ever playing a minor league game, John Olerud needed just 6 minor league games 4 years later.
Okay.
So those are the two that they list as faster than Cam Smith.
Yeah.
Dave Winfield and Bob Horner.
I have no explanation.
Straight.
I got nothing for you. I saw the same thing. I got nothing for you. Yeah.
All right. Because I've seen this in 2 different articles. I don't want to pick on anybody. I'm trying to figure out what the hell am I. Okay, good. So I'm not an idiot. Or at least I'm not dumber than you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really high bar to clear. Yeah. So that's,
So he's, by the way, this article looks, he would actually be the 5th fastest ever. Whichever way you cut it, it's really, really fast.
Yeah. I would just say, it's really, really fast, is what I would say. Don't get too wrapped up in it. Yordan as a rookie, man. I'm pulling up Yordan's rookie year and Carlos Correa's rookie year because they both actually won rookie of the year. If you're just getting into your car, Cam Smith is now a 4.5-to-1 favorite to win rookie of the year. I mean, this ascension has been crazy. Yordan Alvarez got called up midway through the 2019 season, played in 87 games, and and had 27 home runs and 78 RBIs in 87 games. He had 27 bombs and 78 RBIs in 87 games with an OPS of 1,067 as a rookie. Jeez. His OPS plus as a rookie was 173.
So for those of you who don't know what PS Plus, the average, it's standardized, so the average baseball player
100.
Is 100.
Yeah. Like 173 for a rookie getting called up mid-season is
really, really good.
It's an astounding number. It's crazy.
The nice thing, I mean, and the fun thing with Cam Smith is that it's right from opening day. That it's oh, okay. You know what it is, Sean?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why Cam Smith is the fastest, because it's the opening day roster.
Oh,
Winfield
okay.
And Horner. Winfield and Horner went right from the draft to the major leagues.
Oh,
so
oh,
they
like
weren't
middle
on
of the season.
Opening day roster.
Middle of the
yeah,
season. There you yeah. go. Okay. Yeah. You forget the drafts in June. That's right. Now I'll
we're
say
both stupid.
Yeah. I'll say this. These were Carlos Correa's numbers as a rookie. 99. Boy, Carlos is a rookie too, man. 99 games, Carlos Correa had 22 home runs and 68 RBIs and never really got to that level on a per-game basis ever again. He had an 857 OPS. He had OPSs that were higher, but in terms of like sheer power numbers, and that was on an Astros team that was a playoff team, but a very top-heavy team. It was Springer, mm-hmm. Correa, Altuve, and then the drop-off after those guys was pretty substantial in terms of just the caliber of hitter on the team. Boy, I mean, if Cam Smith even gets into the neighborhood of what Correa and Yordan were as rookies, then Dana Brown has struck gold.
It's interesting because there was an article about Cam Smith yesterday. I think it was in The Athletic. And the replies were all Cubs fans. It was, I wanted to go. I like reading the comments in The Athletic. People make some
what are
really
they
good
saying?
Points.
What are they saying?
Just, it was two camps. It was one, I can't believe they screwed this up this badly. You get Kyle Tucker on a one-year rental. My God,
yeah.
I can't believe they're doing this. And now look at what Cam Smith is doing. And then the other camp of Cubs fans who are saying, all right, let's just hold on a minute, okay? We got to let this thing play out.
Yep.
If the Cubs end up being a potent offense and Kyle Tucker's a huge part of it and they make a push for the World Series.
That's the big thing.
It doesn't matter whether it's one year or not. But so let's just hold. Plus, you don't know if Cam Smith is actually going to develop. He had a very promising spring training. But there is a sizable chunk of at least people responding to that article that are already irate. Cubs fans who are irate about this trade, given that Kyle Tucker's batting 150 so far with the two games that they played against the Dodgers in Japan.
Hasn't been a
brilliant start for Kyle Tucker.
No, not
we
yet.
We start that comparison tomorrow, by the way.
Yeah.
Smith head-to-head versus Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, well, you got to do that every day.
We'll factor defense into it too.
Yes,
we'll look at their defensive run value as well.
It is interesting. I wonder from the Cubs side. Well, I'll give you one. I'll give you one in my own personal world, Seth. A gauge on how Cubs fans feel about it. At least one Cubs fan. My best friend growing up, high school and college. We went to elementary, high school, and college together. He's a lawyer in Chicago now. He's a Cubs season ticket holder. Diehard Cubs fan. I can text John Perugini at any time, and he texts me right back, and we have conversations mm-hmm. about anything. I texted him 2 days ago when it was very evident that Cam Smith made the team is when I texted him, and I said, "Hey man, how are y'all feeling about this up there in Chicago right now? This Cam Smith thing? Have not heard back from him yet."
Oh
so,
really?
Yeah. So I mean, probably I should check on him and make sure nothing bad has happened. I choose
in a cocoon of sadness.
I choose to just sit here and go, checkmate, Cam Smith. I do wonder that from a Cubs side. Like the Astros have been on the other end of trades like this plenty of times over the last few years where they're trading out the prospect. Now, I don't know that the Astros have ever given up anything that resembles Cam Smith at this point to get.
And it wasn't like Cam Smith was a disappointment last year as a prospect. They were still very high. The Cubs were very high on Cam Smith.
He didn't
Smith.
Do it. He didn't play enough to be a disappointment. Right. He'd barely been drafted. You know, the Verlander trade, the Greinke trade, the Gerrit Cole trade, even the Kikuchi trade, none of those three guys are killing it right now. The Astros have never given up anything close to Cam Smith, so it's hard to put myself in the shoes of a Cubs fan, but I do think about that, like up in Chicago. What is the floor, especially if Kyle Tucker doesn't re-sign? You know, if Kyle Tucker leaves, which if you talk to Cubs fans, they feel like there's a better chance of that happening than him staying just because the Cubs are not viewed. They're a big market team that doesn't always function like a big market team when it comes to spending. What's the floor? If you were a Cubs fan, what would the minimum that the team accomplishes need to be in order, if Kyle Tucker were a rental, if he leaves, is it the, do you have to win the World Series, get to the World Series, get to the NLCS? Like, what would it be?
I think at the very, very least, the minimum is the NLCS, right?
The bare minimum.
It's got to be the
bare
minimum.
I think that might be
a minority of the people that are okay with it.
Yeah.
As long as this happens. But that's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And I think it's got to be, obviously, with Kyle Tucker playing a huge role in all
indeed.
Of it.
Yeah, no question.
The years of team control over Cam Smith is just so huge when it comes to a one-year injection versus the 6 years of control.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, too, is in baseball, there's very, very, very little hometown discount or any for a one-year rental.
Mm-hmm.
It's not – in football, because renegotiations are way more common, mm-hmm. I mean, the rule now almost is you get a new deal before the guy – you almost get a deal before the guy even gets in the building.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, during the negotiations for the trade. And I saw some of the people, some Cubs fans who were operating that way. They kind of had just come over from the football world. They're like, how did they not hammer out an agreement with him beforehand? Because that's not the way it works in baseball.
Right.
It's not. That's not the part of the trade that you should be criticizing if you're a Cubs fan. Because mm-hmm. it's the exception, not the rule, that you get a new deal as soon as the guy walks in the door.
Interesting question, because since we brought up Yordan, better trade. This is on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. Better trade, the Josh Fields for Yordan Alvarez trade, or the trade for Cam Smith? First of all, it's way too early. But it's hard to compare the two because it was a year of Tucker, an all-star, for three guys, including Cam Smith. Josh Fields for Yordan Alvarez, nobody thought it was going to be this. You know, like a middle reliever. This was the Larry Anderson for Jeff Bagwell trade all over again.
The whole thing about that trade is you also have to remember that was in an era where there was no DH in the NL. And Yordan was playing with potentially...
with a team. I see what you're saying.
Yordan didn't look like a guy that could play the field at all. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Astros traded for a guy that they could look at as, hey, this guy could be a DH.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers are looking at it as like, man, they didn't realize he had potentially partially torn patellar tendons at that point. That they didn't think about him as a guy that could play in the field at all.
Yeah.
So it made sense. And then, you know, Yordan wasn't immediately ready for action.
Right.
So it doesn't – I'll cut the Dodgers a break in a lot of regards. It worked out brilliantly because now the Dodgers are playing in a league that does have the DH and everything else. But the logic at the time made more sense for the Dodgers.
Made more sense. And obviously, if you knew they were going to get a DH, it would have hung on to him. I would submit that even if they hadn't known, even if there were no DH in the NL, if they knew that this is what he was going to turn into for Josh Fields, they would have been like, oh, yeah, you grab a glove, you're in left field. Don't run too hard. Just get your 950 OPS for us there, Yordan. I would say at this point it's Yordan just because Cam Smith has yet to take a major league at bat. Well, I'm going to pump the brakes on comparing Cam Smith to Yordan Alvarez, one of the five or six best hitters in baseball, right out of the chute.
I'm ready to call Yordan a bum.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Be more like Cam, Yordan. And someone says on the text page, and Tucker ain't giving no discount. Let's see, you know, if it's for whatever team he's signing. He's not going to give the Cubs a hometown discount. No, he's not. Kyle Tucker's going to try to max this thing out. I think the Astros have known that for a long, long time. That's why he's a Cub right now. All right, I got a few player futures bets. We'll spend a couple more minutes on the Astros here. I've got four. You want to get in on these before 3 o'clock today? As you know, I have Jeremy Pena over 14.5 home runs, based on his muscle tank top picture that I saw on the internet. Plus, I actually think he's going to hit more than 14.5 home runs.
Plus, he's actually made some substantial improvements offensively and defensively the way that he operates. He's just minimized a lot of the extraneous movement.
Yep, 14.5 feels low. I got Isak Paredes over 25.5 home runs based on the tailor-made swing for Minute Maid Park. I think he's going to get five or six just cheapies this year just by the fact that he's a pull hitter hitting into the Crawford boxes like he did 3 nights ago against Sugar Land, where he hit one into the first row of the Crawford boxes.
Let me tell you another thing that I would advocate, Sean. Now that Daikin, now that Daikin Park is called Daikin Park, as I've always wanted it to be.
Yes.
As it has, as the prophecy hath foretold in a dream I had, that it, one day it would be owned by an air conditioning company, just like the Carrier Dome in Syracuse.
Right.
Listen, at various times in the history of sports, sometimes teams have been accused of, like, hey, when the opposing team's about to kick a field goal, maybe you open one of the loading dock doors that creates a heavy draft or a wind in the stadium.
Yeah.
I don't know. Daikin, I'm guessing, has a boatload of engineers that can manage airflow and whatnot. Seth. So when maybe Paredes or any other pull hitter is up at the plate, maybe, oh, the loading dock door is open down there, something that creates a sucking draft out there in left field.
I'm a little disappointed in you that you would accuse the Astros of trying to get an edge over their opponents in some
accuse
way.
Accuse them? Yeah. Encourage them?
Yeah.
Boy, that's... Show me the spot in the rule book where it says... Actually, I think there is a specific... But don't worry about that.
I guarantee all you there
takes,
is.
All it takes is one stooge planted at a loading dock to just go ahead and open that door
accidentally
take a panel out of one of the roof panels or something and create a draft out there
when Isak Paredes is up. Hunter Brown over 11 wins. I like this one a lot, man. From like June 3rd on last year, he was 10-4 with a 2.2 ERA. Like he, they come up with these numbers sometimes by looking at the history of the player. He's never won more than 11. He won 11 games 2 years ago. He won 11 games last year. So when you're putting odds out on hundreds of players, you go, well, 11 feels like a good number for Hunter Brown. And you don't look deep enough to know that if he is what he was from June on last year, that's at least a 15-game winner this year.
Okay, these are my two biggest pangs of regret, remorse, or I guess just grieving maybe whenever I see anything about that makes me think about Alex Bregman. There's two players on this team right now. One is Hunter Brown, whose personal pitching Yoda seemed to be Alex Bregman.
Yes.
Just like Yoda, Bregman is short and doesn't show a lot of emotion up or down or anything. Yep. That was his personal Yoda. Bregman salvaged Hunter Brown's career by encouraging him to introduce a sinker.
Yeah.
The other is DiCenzo, who would sit down with Bregman and break down his film. Like, Bregman, some of the stories that have come out about Bregman since he left are really, honestly, kind of way above the cut of what you expect one of your star players to be doing. The time he would actually spend, and we'd heard stories about this, but the ones that come out afterwards are really kind of painful. So, but now DiCenzo had a really, really good spring training. Yeah. But I just wonder what the cumulative effect of not having Alex Bregman in that clubhouse, where the even cynical people would point to, he really seemed to have a positive effect on a lot of players. I'm going to miss Bregman for that, even though you don't actually get to consciously see a lot of the results.
Okay, you're answering a question I was going to fire at you as well. Real quick, let me give out my last prop bet, and then we'll get to what you just said.
So I said all that to say, if you want to take the under on Hunter Brown, you could point to the absence of his pitching Yoda, Alex Bregman.
Too late, and I hate that point because it's a good point. I hate that point in terms of my bet. Josh Hader over 33.5 saves. I think the team's going to win around 90 games this year. He saved 34 games last year for a team that won 88. Nobody else is coming in to save games. This ain't a committee. It's Josh Hader. You're paying him to come in and be a hammer. I'm going to assume that he blows fewer saves this year than last year. I'm going to be the optimist. I'll go over 30. That's the one I feel least good about. I love the Hunter Brown one, and I love the Jeremy Pena one. I really like the Paredes one. The Hader one, I'm just here for. You know?
And Hader might be in more save situations, too, just by virtue of your corner outfielders botching it so
keeping
often.
Keeping the game close.
Keeping it within 3 runs.
Keeping the game close. All right, so the Bregman thing is interesting, and we're getting you ready for opening day. Astros opening day today, 3:10 p.m., Framber Valdez on the mound. I think you just answered my question with your how you laid out the Bregman leadership aspect, something I'd not really factored in. But which of the player departures do you think we're going to feel most acutely for this team? Because Bregman is getting replaced by a good player. Bregman himself, a clubhouse leader and a good player, is getting replaced by Paredes, a good player. Kyle Tucker is getting replaced by Cam Smith. We have no idea what to expect there. Ryan Presley is essentially getting replaced by Brian Abreu that creates a ripple effect throughout the rest of the bullpen. And then there's Justin Verlander, who I just mentioned because he's gone. But we've been through this with having to replace Justin Verlander several times because of injury and whatnot.
If we include this into the postseason, what I really, really, really hope is that Cam Smith is Carlos Correa-like in the postseason as opposed to Kyle Tucker, who shriveled up into a shell of himself in the postseason.
Yeah.
He had some huge moments, don't get me wrong. But by and large, Kyle Tucker was not the same player in the postseason.
Not the last 2 years, for sure.
If Cam Smith can be clutch in the postseason, then I will not miss Tucker one tiny little bit.
Okay.
That would be like the slam dunk on top of all of it.
Yeah.
I think with Bregman... Bregman, I think where we might notice it most immediately is in the absence of really impressive plays from third base.
Yeah, maybe.
Bregman defensively was just such a nice security blanket there, and he made incredible plays seem almost routine, and we're not going to see that nearly as often from Paredes.
He'll be the third base version of what Yuli was the last couple years, where Yuli leaves after the 2022 season. And we're like, well, it's too bad he left, but he was an aging player. And wow, look at Jose Abreu's on the team now. And then all of a sudden, balls are getting skipped to first base, and they're bouncing off of gloves and rolling into foul territory instead of getting just scooped. Like, we generally, I think, probably as Astro fans, maybe took for granted how reliable Yuli Gurriel was over there. And I think you're right about that. I think maybe those barehanded plays at third base that Bregman makes look so routine. You know, little squibbers right in front of the mound there that he comes in, bare hands, throws a dime to first base. Is Paredes capable of doing that? Is that more routine than we think? I don't know. I do know. Isak Paredes is not as good a defensive third baseman as Alex Bregman. I think you're 100% right about
that. And it's unfair to, I mean, the difference between Jose Abreu and Yuli Gurriel was
a canyon.
It was vast. I mean, Gurriel is a former shortstop playing first base.
That's right.
So, it's not going to be that drastic, but it's, I think that Bregman was good enough that you'd actually, I think you can actually notice it when that's not there.
Yeah.
When he had those gremlins in his elbow, usually, I think last year, you might typically say, like, okay, well, how much is that really going to hurt you? With Bregman, you felt it. You saw it.
The clubhouse leader thing, I think, is big, especially because Joe Espada is getting asked about it a lot. You can tell it's a big deal because the manager's getting asked about it, and he's having to have answers like, well, I think Jeremy will take that leadership role, which I like Jeremy Peña a lot. I don't know that he's Alex Bregman in the leadership category. Not that he's a bad leader or anything like that. Like, as you pointed out, Bregman is just next level with not just the in-game, in-clubhouse leadership, but what he's meant to various teammates in there. Those are big shoes to fill from that standpoint.
Okay. One of the most polarizing things we've seen about the Astros, just by responses I've seen on the text line or on social media or people who have emailed me about it, was the introduction or the announcement of Cam making the roster and having his family in the clubhouse there.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people who thought that was awesome. There were a lot of people that thought it was kind of cringy. And I wonder if some of the old veterans might have talked to Espada about that beforehand in previous versions of the Astros
said,
like, I don't know, man. Like, look, there's other guys that have just made the team, too. There's other guys who aren't making the team. That it might grate against some of the older school guys, like guys who are veteran leaders. Like, a guy like Bregman might have told Espada, like, I don't know if maybe this is the right thing to do just for the sake of social media.
That's the question. Would Bregman have said something? For purposes of this segment, that is the question. Would Bregman have stepped in and said, Hey, Joe, nobody else in this room got this treatment. Oh, by the way, we are hailing him for taking that guy's job. Chaz is sitting right there, Joe. Now, part of me says if Chaz doesn't want to be put through that, hit better. You know, like, there is that. Just hit better and you don't earn your job and you don't have to sit through this made for social media video that we're about to conduct here of the guy who just took your job. But, you know, kind of knowing a little bit how the mentality of players work and having to earn it and things like that. Like, this is the opposite of rookie hazing. Think about that happening in the NFL. Like, if a guy got named a starter at a position, that's what this is.
That's
the NFL equivalent is a guy who was, And this would be like the equivalent of like a first or second round pick being named a starter in the NFL.
Honestly, no. Like, that's how it is in a position room. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's not like they make a big deal out of like who's going to start or who's going to make the team because of that other side of it. It's always there's somebody getting cut too. So I can't even remember. A lot of times it's like when you find out the depth chart, there's no fanfare about it or anything like on the team. So I don't know, football, baseball, different. But like you're in a D line room. And as a younger player, especially, like in college, I do this. I've had this experience from high school to college to the NFL.
Yeah.
You're getting some veteran players getting benched so you can start as a rookie. Like, yeah, you as a player, you're conscious of that. And you don't want to be sitting there celebrating while the veteran player just got demoted in front of you. You know, it's just, it's more understated. It felt strange in professional sports as opposed to the NCAA football where a guy's getting a scholarship. That's not a tit-for-tat type of deal where some guy on the team is losing out because it's not like you're not taking a guy and booting him out of the room and then giving his scholarship to this kid.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And the flip side to it, too, is he doesn't have a single major league at-bat. Like, he could be batting, you know, 150 2 months into the season. And, you know, if he's batting 150 2 months into the season, he's probably down in Sugarland at that point. And that's the other thing. Like, okay, we had this big fanfare. We haven't even let this thing marinate yet to see if he can actually play in the big leagues. He's good enough to make the big leagues. Is he good enough to stay in the big leagues? Talent-wise, I think he is, but you got to go execute, you know?
Yeah.
So
I don't want to make a federal case out of it or anything, it's interesting in how polarizing it was to a lot of – I mean, because there's some people who thought it was the coolest thing ever. There are a lot of people – like, I got two emails and a DM about this from people that were, like, irate about it.
It's very odd. It's very odd. I think if I'm going to take one good thing away from the video – I mean, the fact that we're still talking about it 2 days later gives you an idea of how odd the whole thing is. The one good thing I'll take away is there was nothing contrived about the emotion that Cam Smith and his family were showing. You know what I mean? Like, there was a decent chance there was somebody in the clubhouse, like, looking at each other going, I guess we should clap now. I don't know. We've been sitting here for 30 seconds. I guess we should clap? Should we clap? Joe, are we supposed to clap? When are we supposed to clap?
If they had, I was like, somebody please start clapping.
Yeah,
or something.
I was clapping.
This is too quiet.
I'm sitting at Lizards clapping by myself at a table.
I was starting to dread that there would be no response at all.
Yeah.
And that everybody would just kind of shuffle out the room or something.
It's like when someone hits their first home run and everybody just turns their back on them in the dugout.
Yeah,
that was
they
that.
Give them a silent
but real.
Treatment. Yeah.
All right. Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Thursday. Pumped for opening day, as you can tell. Hey, in the 8 o'clock hour, a couple things. One, Seth is going to quiz me again with anonymous, and you can play along in your car. People really enjoyed this yesterday. Seth has anonymous quotes from scouts on, are we doing former Texans today?
We're going to do former Texans draft picks.
Draft picks. Okay, so we'll try to play that guessing. We will play that guessing game at 8 o'clock. 8:25, 5 Reasons I Hate You, Mets edition. We still need one more. So send them in. Your reasons you hate the New York Mets, 713-572-4610. Up next, mock draft injection time. Bucky Brooks. We like Bucky Brooks, NFL.com. He's got his third version of the mock draft. And boy, we've got anonymous scouts talking about this player that Bucky Brooks has the Texans taking. You might get a little nervous. Let's just say that. We'll do that coming up next.